We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
And good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also happy to have here on the program, once again, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, on a Tuesday, she is on this program. We talk about things that grow in the home landscape. It's an opportunity for folks to call in with questions and get some help. Maybe you have a problem you're still not sure how to solve. Maybe you are thinking about landscaping issues and you're thinking about planting this year, next year, you know, what have you. We can talk about trees, shrubs, turf, flowers. We can talk about houseplants, any and all of that. Just call in and tell us, you know, give us the best description of whatever plant we're talking about, whatever problem it is, whatever question you have. And Sandy, we'll see if she can help. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. Thank you very much.
Yes.
For being here.
Nice to be here.
So we were just talking about the fact that it's been this summer and even into this fall, it's been really dry.
Yeah, you know, and we really hate to see that, especially when it comes to things like, you know, if you have any new-ish trees or shrubs, as in you planted them over the last, you know, 2-3 years, even 5 years, you really ought to be thinking about watering because even though they maybe they've even already lost their leaves, the soil needs to be moist, you know, and the roots need to be nice and hydrated before they go into winter. So we hate to see that. So I watered trees yesterday, and you know, it's just one of those things that, unfortunately, sometimes you have to do.
Well,
that.
You would hope that if people do have young trees, if they've only been in the ground for a couple of years, the people have been watering them for the last three or four months. But that is something to keep in mind.
Is to continue to water them. I guess that's the big thing. And even with conifers, you know, if you have any evergreens and stuff, even before, as long as the ground is not frozen and it's dry, you may be watering, unfortunately, even into November if we don't start getting some regular rain. So, you know, not a good thing, but you really want to make sure that they're well hydrated.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got some callers here. Let's go right to it. So we'll start with Champagne, and that's line number one. Hello.
Morning.
Yes.
I have a couple of tree questions. First one is about a tree that's growing close to our house. It's an American elm, and it's not blight resistant, Dutch elm disease resistant. What happens is that it grows up to about 30 feet or so, and then it gets attacked by the disease, and the leaves turn brown, and the tree dies, and the bark falls off, and we get it cut out. But then the root system has another sapling the next year.
Yeah.
And so we are currently in the process of having about a 20-foot tree again, and I wonder if there's any way to immunize it against a recurrence of the Dutch elm disease.
Yeah, to be honest with you, that's a disease I haven't done a whole lot with in a long time because we simply kind of, you know, American elms kind of went by the wayside and a lot of the other elms that we have now are fairly resistant to it. So, but there are some, the way I understand it, there are some tree injections that you can do for Dutch elm disease to try to keep them from getting it. So, but that'd be something we'd really have to check in further. I don't know if Phil Nixon's going to be on any time soon.
Probably not.
No. It's one of those things, actually, even though it's a fungal disease, it's actually carried by a beetle. So it's a matter of, you know, part of it is trying to control the beetle as much as it is trying to control the fungus part of it. But there is. So I would either check. You may want to call me. I can do a little bit of searching, and we can find out some more information for you on that.
Okay. Or would this be something I'd get from an arborist?
You'd probably have to do it through a certified arborist because, as far as I understand it, it is a trunk injection that has to be done by an arborist.
And the other question was, there is a certain kind of conifer, I can't really identify it, but that, well, it used to be growing on South Prospect Avenue here in Champaign, but they've just about all of that kind of tree has died, turned brown.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it could be a couple of things. I've noticed on South Prospect there's actually quite a few evergreens that have died for any number of reasons, and it looks like there's a couple things going on. I think quite a few of those were Scotch pines, which is they're having their own problems with pine wilt nematode, and it actually is a nematode, but it's carried, again, by beetles, so it's carried from tree to tree. And so I think some of those, it's an issue of the pine wilt nematode is my guess, at least, for some of those Scotch pines. And then I think there's a few Austrians that are in there that's kind of longer-needled pine that have had some tip blight. And unfortunately, that particular disease, if it happens year after year after year, you get dieback of the whole branches, and then it gets to the point where you really wish the thing would die because it looks so bad. So I think there's probably a couple things going on there with those two particular trees.
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good. And we have some other callers, and the lines are all full. Next, we'll talk with someone in Urbana. Line number two. Hello. The caller there, Urbana, line two. Okay, how about let's go to Matt Toon. This is line four. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Sandy, is it too late to divide peonies? Divide them and plant them?
I would say with this warm weather, typically we'd say September, so we're not that far into October. So, and considering how warm it is, I would go ahead and do it, to be honest with you. I'd go ahead and move and transplant peonies at this time. I wouldn't wait much longer, but it looks like we're going to have some decent weather, so you'll get some opportunity to do that. And then just make sure that you water them well after you transplant them.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Enjoy the show.
All right, very good. And to Piatt County, this is another caller here. Line three, hello.
Oh, hello. I wanted to ask, I hear people on the garden program ask about saving their raspberry bushes, and I'd like to get rid of the wild raspberry bushes. I was cleaning up my back area yesterday, and they seem to have so proliferated, and I just lopped them off, and that's not working. So should I use Roundup?
You could. I'm not sure how effective it is on raspberries in particular. So other than digging them up. I know. I know how you feel about that. You might just sugarcoat that one. Okay, the other thing, you could do a cut surface treatment with Roundup. I don't know if you've tried that yet. But
I try not to, but they're just proliferating.
Yeah, it's actually where you cut the stem and then actually, and it's labeled that way to be used. It's called cut surface treatment. And
So
you cut them off and then you just basically just spray on that. And you don't need much. You just need to sort of wet that surface. And usually it's a pretty good job. Now, raspberries, I'm not quite sure how effective. It'll probably help, but you may have to do it again with that.
All right. And then the second question is, when you talked about watering trees, we've been keeping ours watered, but my question is, we put, the 5-gallon buckets, and we usually put, 10 gallons. Should we be putting that? These are new trees that are, 7 feet, 8 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Should we be putting that at the drip line or closer to the trunk?
Well, you really want, I don't know how big these are, but more than likely when you, I don't know how big the root ball was, but more than likely if you're putting the water near the trunk, you're also getting toward the drip line. Typically the roots that we'd really want to make sure they get moist are near the drip line. Right. And then usually that's where the new roots are being produced is basically where the root ball ended, where that new soil sort of, and that's usually where the new roots are going to start to be produced. And that's where you really want to make sure that's nice and moist.
Okay, and then last question, what about the burning bushes? Are they considered invasive? I have an area far from my house, and I just wonder, you see such huge burning bushes, but are they listed as invasive?
Yeah, burning bushes are one of those that in some areas is considered invasive. And from what I have seen, it seems like more some of the burning bushes, it depends on how they're cared for. And I think just some of them seem to produce more fruit than others. And it's really the fruit's the issue because the birds eat the fruit and then they pass it all over to different areas. So if you have a burning bush that's actually producing fruit and they have kind of a neat little, just star-shaped little fruit on them, I'd be concerned about those that are actually going ahead and producing fruit. So are you thinking about planting new ones or you just have it?
Yes, I was gonna look at the stores and see if they had, burning bushes maybe that were labeled non-invasive.
Yeah, you won't find that probably. Are you looking for fall color? Is that what you're looking for?
Yes, fall color,
You actually might think of a few other plants. And actually, I just saw some the other day. There's a few other things that I don't know how big. Do you want them to stay small or?
I can take really big bushes, actually.
Well, there actually is a really nice service berries are particularly nice for fall color. Plus, they have white flowers in the spring.
Oh,
they really
okay.
have kind of full season. And there's different types of service berries out there, and some of them are a little taller than others. Some are more bush-like than tree-like, but very pretty, and they're native. And they do have a nice little blueberry on them that's quite tasty that the birds like. And,
and
so I think you may find there's some a lot of other plants out there that are probably better, and you won't have to worry about them being invasive.
Would that be at a nursery, or would they have them at the big box store?
Probably both, but it's service berry or amelanchier, sometimes they're called.
Okay.
There's also witch hazels. There's, depending on what colors that you want, there's some native sumacs that are really nice. Yeah, there's a flame sumac that I just looked at mine the other day, and it is truly flame red. And it actually beats any burning bush because it's a very glossy red. So there's some other really good ones out there.
Okay, well, thanks so much for your help.
All right, very good. Our guest this morning in this hour of Focus is Sandy Mason. She's with us once a month. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and we talk about lawn and garden care. And whatever's on your mind, you got some kind of plant issue, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And you can also email will-talk@illinois.edu. We'll go back to Urbana, line number one right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
We only have a small area of lawn, and it has been almost entirely, except for a few blades, taken over by the standard creeping Charlie, which doesn't bother me that much, and violets, and then this other grass that seems to gradually get bigger in clusters. It's got fine multi-leaves that come off a single stalk. And it doesn't green up until quite late in the season. And I don't know what the name of that is. I'm sure you've talked about it before. But I would like something. I would like to get some grass put back in there. And I know both this kind of grass, or whatever this green stuff is, and the creeping Charlie and the violets all produce seeds. And it's not just a matter of killing off whatever's there, but also a matter of not having the seeds there.
So your question is, how do I get rid of this stuff, or what should I put in
its
place?
How do I get rid
of
it, and then, presumably too late this time of year. So how do I get rid of it without killing off, we've got big fir trees nearby and bushes, and I don't want to use an herbicide that's going to kill everything that's nearby.
Right. Well, it's probably Nimblewill, which is a... it's a perennial, but it's a warm season grass, and it is a it's usually considered a weed. It's kind of fine textured, and it seems to have done particularly well over the last few years when the Kentucky bluegrass maybe didn't do well in certain spots. So is this still got some sun to it?
Yeah,
this area?
It has some sun. Part of the day.
Okay, so it's more than 4 hours?
Yes.
Okay, because that's the one thing to always keep in mind, that even shade-loving grasses need some sun. So I think what I might consider, considering how late it is now, you might even just think about smothering everything off. And you certainly could do that with, and I've certainly done that with Creeping Charlie, where you actually do the lasagna gardening method. And you can actually Google that. There's a book called Lasagna Gardening. But the whole idea is that you just cover it with either wet newspaper or wet cardboard, and then you cover that with whatever you have, shredded leaves, and then another layer of, say, compost. And so basically you're kind of making like lasagna, and it just smothers everything out. And then by spring, it's decomposed enough, you just plant right into it.
Oh.
So I've used it on, I had a strawberry bed that was really getting overrun with violets one time, and I did that, and it just did a really nice job of smothering everything out. I've done it with Creeping Charlie. Of course, the Creeping Charlie poked out on the sides of wherever I didn't have them, which is an amazing stuff. But it really does a really pretty good job. And this time of year, it'd be a great time to do it because you have all winter for it to sort of sit and decompose.
And I get to look out my big window at...
It's mulch. Well, it's mulch. It's going to be brown eventually anyway. So, but it's really, you're just looking, because the top layer could be wood chips. So you're just basically looking at mulch. So you certainly could try that, unless you want to go to grass method. And then I wouldn't put the wood chips on, but I'd probably do more like compost or something like that as the top layer.
Mm-hmm. So I can do that now.
Sure.
You said newspapers and then... and wet them down.
Right.
Or cardboard and wet it down and then add.
And then you just start adding, you know, just shallow layers. It could be 2 to 3 inches of really whatever you have. Shredded leaves, this is a great time of year to get shredded leaves. Then I'd probably get, you know, if you have a little bit of soil, you put that on top and then you put a little compost on top. So you're basically kind of doing this lasagna thing.
So how I just need to get several inches. It doesn't matter what the layers are composed of as long as I've got something like newspapers or cardboard to start with.
Yeah, pretty much. As I said, there's a book on lasagna gardening, and you certainly can, you know, try different things. But to me, it's whatever you have around.
Okay.
What kinds of things you have available to you. And you're just making different layers. I would probably wet it because it is so particularly dry right now.
Right.
And then it just, the whole idea is that it might be 6 to 8 inches high, but as it decomposes, it actually gets much shorter. So don't worry about that part of it.
Okay. And then when do I plant new grass seed? I had tried this sort of with a tarp because we were doing some building a couple of years ago, and we used that as our staging area, and I put down a tarp. But that didn't kill it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Tough stuff.
Well, yeah, and I reseeded it, but the stuff all came back. So I'll try again, and then I would I didn't use Kentucky bluegrass. I used a drought-resistant grass seed mixture, which seems to be working in other places.
Okay.
And I would
put
that in early spring.
April is usually the time to do grass seed.
Okay.
And the nice thing about it, this method is that you're actually also covering up the seeds. So as long as those seeds stay, you know, 3 to 4 inches deep and you never till it, those seeds can stay down there. So you don't have to worry quite so much about having all those weed seeds come back because now they're 3 to 4 inches deep.
Okay. So they need sunlight to spread.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. So and in that case, then you would just plant, you would just put your grass seed, if that's what you're going to do.
Right,
so it's right on top of that?
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, it works. It's amazing. And, it's a lot of work. You know, it's a lot of work to put all that stuff on there, but it improves the soil. That's the good part. You know, you're adding a lot of organic mulch and organic matter, and just plus the fact that and then everything's under there. So as far as, you know, if you're not tilling, you're not bringing all that stuff to the surface, it just sits down there. So.
Okay, very good. And we'll keep going. Let's see. Champaign County is our next call. It's line number 2. Hello?
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
I need a recommendation for some shrub-sized plant material. We pulled out a couple large yews that were at the end of the driveway, and it's on a state highway, and it was kind of blocking the view of traffic.
Mm-hmm.
They also probably use a lot of salt on this highway, and I'm looking for something that would probably stay under 2 or 3 feet tall.
Wow.
That might be a little bit salt resistant. I was hoping there'd be something more evergreen, but there doesn't seem to be much out there besides different junipers that grow horizontally.
Yeah, I was going to say that'd be about the only thing, to tell you the truth, especially at that size. If you don't want it more than 2 or 3 feet, that's going to make it really tough. And I was just about to say junipers, but I know that's not probably. But they are pretty salt tolerant. And there's lots and lots and lots of different varieties out there where you can get, you know, some bluer ones and some yellow ones, you know, some different colors if you're looking for something different.
Yeah.
That was the first thing that came to mind as far as salt resistant, because unfortunately we have some other evergreens, but they're not going to stay that short, or they're not going to be salt resistant. The other thing that I did think about is, I don't know how you feel about doing roses, but roses are actually pretty amazing, especially any of the rugosa roses. If you can have some of those with that parentage, you can actually get some pretty low-growing roses now. I wish I could think of the name of the one I have right now, but it's just this flat thing. Oh, there's one called the fairy. And so I don't know how you feel about roses, but there's some pretty short ones. Yeah, they're pretty short ones and pretty amazingly salt resistant.
So would something like the smaller spirea, would that be a possibility?
Yeah, there certainly are some small spireas, pink princes, and there's a few other ones that they really stay pretty short. And you could certainly try those. I don't know about their salt tolerance, but I would imagine, you know, I don't know if this is a regular thing where they're always pushing salt on there. If it's just salt spray, you'd probably be fine with those.
Okay.
The trouble with evergreens, of course, is that they're getting the hit of the salt spray right on their leaves.
Right.
And that's what really knocks them out. So on the deciduous stuff, you might be a lot better off.
Okay. All right. Any other things that come to mind?
Those would be the things I could think of that are salt tolerant. There just isn't a whole lot of stuff that's going to stay that short, to be honest with you.
True. The youth didn't have a problem with it. They got way tall.
So they didn't have a problem with the salt with salt spray?
No.
Oh, well, then maybe it's not.
It may not be such an issue.
Yeah, it may not, because I would be surprised if they didn't get some. Usually they get brown on the street side if they're having salt spray issues. So you may find that you don't have quite the issue with salt spray as you might think.
Okay.
There's certainly some, you know, I don't know if you'd want to go with boxwoods or not, but that would be the other thing. If salt spray is not an issue, boxwood might be nice because you can keep them short.
I consider with the green velvet boxwood, that seems to stay a little bit shorter. I know they can all get pretty big.
Yeah, and you can at least prune those, you know, pretty hard on the boxwoods. And I have green velvet at home, and I've been amazed at just how tough a plant it is. And I'm in a pretty windy area and, you know, not the best conditions because I'm out in the open. And so they seem to do pretty well, too, if you're looking for something a little bit more evergreen and maybe not quite the juniper route.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
All right, very good. Bye-bye. Thank you. And next is Champagne. This is line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Is the line clear?
Yes, fine. Okay. Go ahead.
We have a row of arborvitae, which we planted about 10 years ago on the north side of our driveway. And they have managed to weather all the conditions, and they're doing okay. And this year, we tried to extend that row by adding 2 more, and we find that one of those 2 is just doing very, very poorly. And the only difference is they're all in the same narrow space facing north. The only difference we can see is that there is a wood fence behind the older arborvitae and protecting also the little arborvitae. And then there's another one we put down, and that's got no protection behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's doing very poorly. And we figure it couldn't be protection because that's what arborvitae do. They weather the winds that are coming.
Mm-hmm. So when did you plant these, the new ones?
Oh, the new one was just last it would have been in the spring, early spring.
Of this year?
Yeah. To be planted 2 more to extend the row. And one of those is doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the taller one is just brown and sick-looking and yellow, and we've been watering it, and what's up?
Okay, so you did get to water it in July and August when it was so dry.
Yes.
You're hesitating.
Yes, we were traveling.
Your trees will tell you.
Yes, we were traveling, and I know we came back in the garden and looked pretty awful.
It was because it was hot. Not only was it dry, but it was hot. So we had both of those things. And I will tell you, you know, especially when they first get established, a lot of the things, you know, even that we might think of as being, you know, even windbreaks or screens, when they're brand new, boy, they really take a lot of extra water. And I would almost bet that maybe that fence provided enough wind protection that the other ones didn't dry out like this other one did.
You think it is?
Yeah, the wind, we get these, you know, really hot, drying winds. It doesn't take very long for those guys to dry out. So I'd almost bet it's probably been a water issue, and unfortunately that's just, you know, just the way it is sometimes with some of our seasons and with you being gone and not able to water on a regular basis. That would be my guess. It's a brand new plant, and I would say it's probably been a water issue for it.
So the fence really, there's no way we could extend the fence, so this is going to have to survive without
them. Yeah, it may be just this particular one. You're just going to have to really make sure that, you know, that it gets watered, because it's just not getting that wind protection that the other ones are getting. So that will certainly make a difference.
I see.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll be able to save it.
Yeah, I would try. You know, sometimes it's with some of the arborvitae, you know, as long as the stems themselves are still green, they have the chance of just budding out at the ends. They'll look a little bare, but they're budding out in the ends. But if the branch itself seems like it's dead, then you may be better off just getting a new one, to be honest with you, especially if it's still under warranty.
It is under warranty, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. We're about midway through this hour. It's Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and Sandy Mason is here with us. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care. She's got things growing in the home landscape. You've got questions. You got a problem. Maybe there is a particular spot, and you're looking for a recommendation for a plant. with certain characteristics and that would be good in that place. Sandy can see if she can suggest a couple things to you. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. I want to take a second here to talk about, I know you have a couple of programs coming up that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, we actually have the Master Gardeners have a program coming up on October 19th, which is next Tuesday, and it's on orchids. So it's 7 o'clock at the Champaign County Extension office on Country Fair Drive in Champaign, and people can come and learn about orchids. And it's one of those things where the Master Gardener who does a lot with orchids, Mitzi Williams, is going to come in and talk about how to grow them and all that good stuff. So it's October 19th at 7 o'clock at the Extension office. And then also we have, you know, we've talked a lot about emerald ash borer. I know Phil Nixon has talked about it here, as myself. So emerald ash borer, we're having a workshop on Tuesday, November 2nd up in Rantoul at the Rantoul Business Center. And that runs from 4 to 6 on November 2nd at the Rantoul Business Center. And emerald ash borer, kind of what, you know, it has been found in Rantoul. So this is, okay, what do I do now kind of thing? As in, I have ash trees. Should I treat them? Shouldn't I treat them? And it's also really would be good for a professional arborist. Maybe they're not quite sure, you know, what they need to be doing or what they could be doing at this point, because this is certainly, you know, Rantoul's not that far away from Champaign-Urbana, and so we really want to make sure the emerald ash borer doesn't spread any further. So we want to make sure that people know more about it and then how to protect their own trees. So that's November 2nd, 4 to 6 at the Rantoul Business Center. And I will take this opportunity just to remind people, as we're thinking about winter and stuff, don't move firewood. That's the big thing.
Right.
We were looking at a map on emerald ash borer and how it's moving and where it's been found, and it's amazing. It shouldn't be amazing, but it's pretty much followed the interstates. And it's been along the interstates and at rest stops and stuff. So that's not a particular coincidence. It's just the fact that people are moving firewood from one place to another. The beetle itself doesn't really travel that far from year to year. It really doesn't. But yet we're moving it by moving firewood. So if you have firewood, burn it where you buy it, you know, buy it where you burn it kind of thing. Don't move it around because that's how it's going to get spread into Champaign-Urbana and into other areas.
Yeah. So. There's a certain inevitability about it, but that we're talking about a much longer time frame. So say like within, and I'm sure I talked about this with Phil, he said something like, well, within 100 years, maybe there won't be any more ash trees. It may take that long, but we shouldn't be doing things that would speed up the process.
Absolutely.
And that, and in humans moving stuff around, that's the way, it's a big way insects move. And that's how we've gotten so many introduced species, pest species here in this country. They've come one way or another. They've hitched a ride with something else.
Right.
And so we've gotten stuff from one place to another in this country, and we've gotten stuff that have come from other countries into the United States that way.
Right.
So you really need to be careful about that, and that's a big issue.
And Champaign County, it hasn't been official yet, but it's pretty much under a quarantine. We know it's Champaign County is going to be under a quarantine. So the movement of firewood then is a big issue even outside. You're not allowed to even take it outside of Champaign County at that point, plus the fact we just don't want to do it. And it's any firewood. I mean, any hardwood firewood, it is going to be regulated at this point. So you really have to, I don't care whether it's oaks or whatever, because there's other beetles and stuff that get spread in oak firewood. So it's just the movement of firewood, just really use it where you buy it local, do all those kinds of things, and just really make sure that it's okay. You can buy the ones, sometimes you'll see at some of the gas stations and stuff, but there is actually an emblem, an USDA emblem, shield that's on that firewood that shows that it has been federally, you know, they've looked at it, it's okay, they've certified that it's okay. So you can buy firewood that has that emblem or shield on it, and then that's fine.
Yeah. And can you still get firewood from the yard waste recycling facility?
You know, I'm not sure about Landscape Recycling Center. I'm not sure how much they're dealing with firewood at this point. And maybe because of emerald ash borer, I don't know. But I think they do. So that would be worth a call out to the Landscape Recycling Center, or check with any of your recyclers and see. But, you know, there's plenty of opportunities that people have, you know, either check with local arborists or whatever, because there's a lot of local people that could provide firewood for
you. All right. We got some other callers here. Tazewell County is next. Line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of buffalo grass?
Yes.
Okay. I'm wondering if that's a grass that I could plant up here in Tazewell County.
Well, buffalo grass is a native grass, but it's native more to the short grass prairies of the Midwest, so a little farther west of us. So it is a native grass. It is you know, a good grass for those native areas. But I will tell you, it's a warm season grass, which is different than Kentucky bluegrass and perennial ryegrass and all that stuff. So what does that mean? Well, warm season grasses, they don't warm up. They're kind of like zoysia in the sense that they don't get going until May. And unfortunately, and actually the U of I did some studies where they actually looked at buffalo grasses, maybe an alternative to different, you know, lawn-type grasses. And what they found is, unfortunately, a lot of our weeds are cool-season weeds. And so what they found was that the weeds would come in early in the season. Before the buffalo grass got going, they would fill in all those areas, and by the time the buffalo grass came up, it just wasn't a very good competitor. So it would be one of those things that I would really probably think twice if you're really thinking of it as a lawn type grass. I think I'm not sure you'd really be particularly happy with it.
Okay, I was thinking of it. I've got mostly shade, but I do have some areas that are sunny, and I was thinking of it as paths through those sunny areas. But
it's the wheat. It's the
You haven't been very encouraging.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, but I know I think you need to be realistic at this point. And the fact that it is a warm season grass, and that's the problem. All of our cool season weeds, if you can think of all the weeds that come in early, whether it's henbit or creeping Charlie, or there's lots of things that like that cool weather, and they come in early, they get going, the buffalo grass just doesn't have a chance. Unfortunately.
Another dream bites the dust.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And it really was one of those things that a lot of people were looking at to see if this is something that's going to work out better maybe than some of our other grasses. But sorry.
Okay. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And let's go on again to another caller. And that would be someone in Gibson City.
Good morning.
Number two. Hi. Go ahead.
I have a neighbor who's getting ready to put in an 8-foot-high white vinyl privacy fence in his backyard around his pool, which is great for him, but I don't care to look at it, so I'm trying to figure out. I'm really fond of lilacs, and I was thinking of planting just a row of lilacs against the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Ordinarily they would get almost full sun all day long, except there's going to be this 8-foot-high fence. So are they going to be suitable? The soil is generally well drained and pretty fertile. I've had good luck with everything I've planted back there. Would you recommend lilacs, or should I consider something else?
So they'll get sun till like midday or something, or?
Well, and I could plant them a distance away from the wall. I've got a pretty good sized backyard, and just have an empty bed behind them. But I liked something that was somewhat close to the fence that's getting put up.
Right. So usually when we talk about, you know, full sun, we usually think of at least 8 hours is considered full sun.
Right.
So, you know, when you start getting into 6 hours, most of the plants that like full sun will still do fine. When you start getting less than 6 hours, then ones that really like full sun may not like it all that much. So if that helps you any, and because you may want to pull it away from the fence a little bit anyway, and just in the sense that so you can get behind them if you need to do any pruning or anything like that. So you might want to think that back. You know, lilacs are fine. You know, I love lilacs. The one thing with lilacs, I will say, they kind of have that one season of beauty. You know, it's kind of those few weeks of beauty, and then, you know, they don't thrill me all that much after that. So I'm not sure I would do a whole planting of them. You might even think about some of the things like viburnums. I don't know if you know some of the viburnums that are out there, but there's just some fabulous ones. And I don't think I've ever met a viburnum I didn't like. They're just gorgeous plants. And there's a Korean spice viburnum that has a very fragrant flower if you're looking for something that's fragrant. And it's just a nicer looking shrub, and that it's just a little bit more compact, and you know, it just has a little different look to it than lilacs do. So I think Korean spice is really a good one. Birkwood is another really nice one, has very fragrant flowers. And it has more of a glossy leaf to it. And it has actually a very nice fall color, which typically we don't get too much with lilacs.
Sure. No.
So
go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's fine.
I was going to say, how tall will the viburnum get?
The viburnum, depending on which ones you get, actually most of them will get big. They'll easily get 5 feet, depending on what you want. And some of them, like the leather leaf viburnums, will get even more like 10 to 12 feet. So they'll be even over the fence, and so then your neighbor can look at your viburnums.
I would prefer that.
So there are some very large ones, and actually the leather leaf viburnum has very pretty flowers to it, but it also is almost a kind of semi-evergreen. evergreen. And even Birkwoods will do that, where they'll kind of hang on to their leaves even late into the season. They get kind of a purple fall color and then kind of hang on to them. So I think, you know, I know right now it's probably going to be very alarming to see this 8-foot white fence. But to be honest with you, as a designer, I think, wow, what a great backdrop. Anything you put in front of it, it's just going to stand out and it's just going to be gorgeous. So any kind of thing that really has a cool, like I was mentioning, the service berries, they have a beautiful habit to them, very pretty bark. That's really going to stand out in front of that white fence. So you may even think about even some things like service berries or something, or paper bark maples or something that is bigger, that has a beautiful bark that really can show off in front of that white fence.
Okay. Well, I don't want anything that's going to get real tall because I have a vegetable garden. I don't want to impact the sun from that.
Sure.
But I'll certainly look into the viburnum. That sounds very appealing.
Yep. I think you'd like those.
Will they blend well with lilacs if I put a couple lilacs
sure.
in?
Sure. Absolutely.
I've got about a 50-foot stretch of fence.
Oh, you've got plenty of space. Oh, no, that's great. Yeah. I would certainly put some, you might think about the lilacs. That'd be great to put a few of those in there. You might even think about things like, I'm into this witch hazel thing because I just saw some beautiful Diane witch hazels that I just think are gorgeous. Has a beautiful fall color. And they actually have a flower that's really, really late in the season, almost in November. So they kind of get a variety of things that are blooming at different times besides just that lilac time, and I think you'll really enjoy it.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Well, good luck.
The witch hazel and the viburnum and the service berry. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Great.
Very good. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We are talking this morning here with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, and we have maybe about 10-12 minutes left in the show. We have some other folks with questions in the queue, and we'll get to them in just a second here. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. Up next, we have a caller in Aurora, line number 4. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Yes, this is not my original question, but you were talking about the that flame sumac.
Mm-hmm.
Does it grow real tall?
No, it's more like, I think probably that one is more like the 10-foot maybe.
Oh,
they're just gorgeous. But they're really, really pretty.
Well, that's what I like when you had mentioned that earlier. Can you get those at like a ma and pa type of greenhouse or a big box?
Probably not in the box stores. You'd probably have to go to more of a garden center because it isn't as you probably find the staghorn sumac fairly commonly in a lot of areas. And it also has a very pretty fall color. I will say there's one called Tiger Eye that's real popular right now that has kind of a yellow color to it during the season, but then gets this really pretty fall color. So Tiger Eye is a really pretty one, but that's a different type of sumac, and those you'd probably find at a lot of places. The flame sumac, I've had a little bit of harder time to find those, it'd definitely be one of those things that I would keep checking, because the thing I like about it is the fact that it has a glossy leaf. All the other sumacs, for the most part, have this kind of a dull, you know, look to the leaf, which it would just still pretty, but it's just different. So
now, my next question, you were talking about roses. Is there any type of roses that are more shade tolerant, you know, that maybe only get a few hours of sun per day?
Boy, that's a tough thing. You know, and I've heard people mention that they think there are some, but I have tried a few in different areas, and I haven't had a whole lot of luck with it, I'll tell you. They grow fine. It's just they don't seem to flower very well, which is pretty much what we want with roses.
Well, some of these where I was thinking of planting them, I have some juvenile delinquents that live behind me that use my yard as an extension of theirs. So I'm not so much concerned about how they look as make life difficult for them as far as, you know, trying to use my yards.
Yeah, well, just between you and I, there are things called the rugosa roses they have a lot of thorns to them, but very pretty and very tough. And I would have mentioned that actually they're really good for salt tolerance and stuff, but they tend to get bigger than a lot of roses. So I would say what you'll find is they will probably grow. They probably won't flower as well, and they tend to open like a lot of plants do. They tend to open up a little bit more. They're not as leafy as what you'll see in full sun. So you might want to try just a few of those to see how well they'll do just with a few hours of sun. You might be surprised.
Okay. And here's my original question. I tore up a big chunk of my yard and going to plant some grass seed back there, but I won't do it this year just because it's been too darn dry. But I wanted to test for the pH. What's the pH that for most grasses do we usually figure?
Yeah, usually we're thinking about just slightly acidic. So usually around 6.5 is really, really pretty good. But grass will actually grow even into maybe 7, 7.5, somewhere in there. So that so kind of hanging around neutral is probably pretty good, but slightly acidic is probably better.
And if I take some soil samples, where would I get those tested at? Would you know?
Yeah. Now, are you local again? I'm sorry. Are you here?
I live right on the edge of DuPage, King County.
Okay. Check with your local extension office. They probably have a listing of soil testing, or look in the yellow pages and stuff. There's soil testing. Usually, any kind of ag soil services place will also do soil testing for gardens. So any of those kind of places will. But I would just check the yellow pages, and you should be able to find a place.
And how deep should I test the soil? When you probe to
right,
take the soil?
Right. Well, usually what we recommend is, get a clean bucket, and then what you want to do is, scrape off that top surface because you don't want all that junk in there that's on the top. And then you really, for lawns, I would say just sort of take a trowelful, so as deep as a trowel, so 4 to 6 inches or so, and then put that in the bucket and maybe do 4 or 5 in a few different areas and then mix all that up and then get your final sample from that mixture.
Okay.
And then usually you don't need more than a cup of soil is really about all they need.
And one last real quick one. You were talking about watering evergreens. I have some huge evergreens, and I do need to water them this year. A lot of times I just drop a hose out underneath, which maybe that's not a good idea.
Well, anytime you're watering, what you want to do is just make sure it's thorough watering. So you just don't want the water to roll off, obviously. So you really want it to be slow watering if you can. So if you can just put a hose is fine. I just wouldn't put it on full pressure and just really let it sort of sink in as best you can or filter it as best you can.
Well, if I were to use like a lawn sprinkler, is there a rule of thumb of how many inches of water that you'd want to put on them?
They're huge. Lawn sprinklers are not all that great, I will tell you, because they're actually getting the foliage wet, which is really not what we want. Plus, you lose a lot of water through evaporation. So you're really better off with a hose than with a lawn sprinkler if you can move the hose around to different spots. If you had something like a soaker hose, is even better, because then you can get the whole area in one, you don't have to keep moving the hose around. So usually what we say, an inch of water usually will wet the soil to 8 inches, usually, depending on what the soil is.
And so, how deep would you want to go for the roots on these evergreens? How deep is the root mass?
8 inches would be minimum, but probably usually the roots are in the top 12 inches of soil.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
I won't take any more of your time.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. We'll go on here to Belgium, line number one. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you all.
Uh-huh.
You were talking earlier about emerald ash borer, and it's sad what we're going to see happen to a tremendous tree that's in our woods. But I wanted to ask you a question about another tree that's in our woods, and I've mentioned this to you before. It's called the butternut.
Uh-huh.
And butternut has been blighted very badly, and it's brought on by the same reasons the emerald ash borer, indiscriminate transportation of lumber or wood. I've heard something just very recently, and it's not that I want to do this, but it's something I think should be generally known better. I'm under the understanding that the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, wants anybody that cuts down a butternut tree to register it with them, because butternut trees are definitely endangered. There were very few in the first place, and there's lots fewer now.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard anything about that?
No, register as in register the firewood then, or register
No. Like if you were going to go cut it down, you're supposed to go kind of like get a permit or something.
I have not heard that.
You have not heard
No. I really haven't. So it would be worth probably just checking out the DNR website.
Yeah.
And there's lots of phone numbers on there, so you may want to check. But no, I've never heard that before. So they're thinking just so they know where they are, where they're gone, where they're...
Because, obviously, the butternuts will drop nuts and stuff. So maybe they're hoping they could find where the trees are at and find some other ones. I don't know.
Yeah,
collecting
seed. I don't know. Maybe someone's actually doing the collecting seed. I had not heard that.
Yeah, I just recently heard it, and I couldn't believe it. And that's why I thought maybe you knew it, too.
Yeah, no, especially I would be surprised if they actually are requiring a permit, but yeah. But I could certainly see that maybe someone's interested in that they're trying to collect seed.
Yeah,
I mean, I could certainly see that.
Yeah, you know, and butternut looks so much like a walnut. Most
right.
people would not
right.
know the
right,
difference.
Right, till you see the nut, and then you know for sure that that's a butternut.
The leaves will also do it, too, because there are different numbers on the
right.
leaves on their
right.
leaves.
Man,
what do they call that? Central stock? But whatever.
Yeah, right. They're compound leaves.
Yeah,
so
they're compound leaves. Right. One has 13 and 15, and the other one has 17 to 19. So how, you have to really get there pretty close and look.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Yeah, no, I hadn't heard that. So
okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, sure,
we'll go at least one more here, and this caller's in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have arborvitae, and they got something this last summer, which I tried to contact you about via email. It looked like scale to me. Whatever it was happened instantly, and everything just turned rusty and dead. And I cut out some of it. And so I have a couple small trees that are alive, but they're very lopsided and missing major branches, and the other one, I think, has croaked. What should I have done? And if they're missing big branches, are they going to branch out and fill in, or are they going to be lopsided and just half the tree?
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's one of those things that typically on arborvitae, you know, they'll spread out a little bit, but I wouldn't expect that those holes are going to be gone anytime soon.
So I might as well replace the dead one and the two lopsided ones.
Yeah, you may want to. It depends on how, you know, they'll you know, as the branches get bigger, sometimes they'll move down a little bit just because the sheer weight, because they've gotten bigger, and so they kind of fill in a little bit. But if you have a huge hole, it's probably always going to be there. And I will tell you that a lot of times we really need to. What you might want to think about if it starts to happen again next year is actually to take a sample to the plant clinic or to the local extension office or something, so somebody can take a look at it. Because arborvitaes get spider mites, they get a few other issues, and even, you know, even just drought issues that we talked about before. So
right, but I know I can see the spider mites, the little red things, and when you tap on the branches, they kind of fall off, and you know that's I've sprayed
right.
for that before, which I don't like to do. But I could see it growing on the stems and the branches, just little kind of triangular shapes all over everything. Is that what it was?
Well, it could very well have been scale.
Yeah.
Which would be the other thing. So, you know, just trying to get it. And if you can see it now, we certainly could take a look at it and maybe get a better idea of what it is. And then, because the big thing with scale is, unfortunately, you really have to time the sprays at the right time. They're really tough. Once the adults are there, they're really tough to control. So you really, what you're trying to do is control the young ones when they're much more susceptible to insecticides. So we really, you know, we have to time it. So and unfortunately, all the scale kind of come out at different times when they have the young. So you have to really get accurate identification so you know when to spray and when is it going to be most effective for you. So
okay, great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Well, the lines are clear here, and we do have maybe about 4 minutes left. So if somebody wants to call real quick, they can get in. Is there something else?
Yeah, actually,
want to
talk
about?
He was talking. The gentleman was talking about butternut seeds, and I will tell you there actually is a national effort to collect ash seeds. And really, they're looking for ash seeds from mainly forested type areas, ones that are going to be more native type. So if people do have an ash tree and they have one that's particularly nice, and because the seeds will be coming out or really out now or are available now. So people, if they think they really have a nice one and really would like to preserve that. So the whole idea is that collecting those seeds so that we have that sort of seed bank so that when hopefully this whole emerald ash borer sort of goes through, we can maybe come up with some that are maybe more resistant, or we'd actually still have that genetic capability to sort of go back and maybe refurbish things again with ash seeds.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
But it's something they can just go online and check for the saving ash seeds.
So are there still things? Can you still be planting trees now? Can you still plant perennials?
Absolutely. You certainly can be planting trees and shrubs. And the nice thing is a lot of times they're on sale this time of year, so you really can get some pretty good deals on them. I'd absolutely go ahead and plant trees and shrubs. You obviously going to have to water them if we don't get into a little bit of a wet period here. Perennials, you certainly could still plant. I probably wouldn't wait too much later. Certainly, this is the whole month of October is a great time to be planting flowering bulbs. So anything, you know, daffodils and tulips and all those kinds of things. And even think about some of the smaller bulbs. There's some wonderful little ones like winter aconite and Grecian windflower. And the nice thing is they're little small guys. You can put them anywhere just about where you have a little bit of space. You don't have to dig as big a hole, as deep a hole, so they're pretty easy to plant. So that's a good thing. This is also the time to be planting garlic. So in your vegetable garden, we would plant garlic this time of year and sort of get a jump on garlic growing for next year. So there's really lots of opportunities to still do things. So I think that's the good part.
There are a number of these really nice, very early flowering things that are little bulbs, like probably a lot of people maybe have snowdrops.
Those are great ones, aren't they?
And then there are the scilla. The blue things.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of other ones in different colors. And that's really what it's encouraging. If it seems like it's been a long, hard winter, when these things are some of the very first things that flower, that say to you, yes, there will be spring.
Right.
And that's really nice to see them. Yeah. And now's the time to put those things in the ground.
And the nice thing is, I think a lot of times people look at the garden, it's so full right now, you think, oh, there's no room. But you always have to remember, in the spring, all those peonies and stuff aren't up, or barely up. So you can put, little bulbs way in the back, if you need to, or put tulips in the back, even though it looks like they would never be seen. But just realizing in the spring that all that stuff is not going to be there. Yeah. So there's usually plenty of opportunities. And actually, a lot of the bulbs do very well next to, peonies or any of the other types of plants that your perennials that you have out there, they do quite nicely. So there's always a spot for bulbs. That's my theory.
And I guess my experience, about particularly some of these little early spring flowering things, they're not something that you can always go into your local garden center and find. Oftentimes, I think you actually have to order them, so that it may be something you have to plan ahead a little bit. I always make this note about how I want to do this, and somehow
it never quite happens that way. Especially if you want certain colors.
Yes.
I think that's one of the big things. And then I will tell you, on bulbs, generally bigger is better. So for the bigger, you generally have to pay more money for like bigger tulip bulbs or bigger daffodil or whatever, but generally you get better flowering. So it sometimes really is worth it to go ahead and spend that little extra money and get bigger bulbs, and then generally you actually will have better flowering. So that's the other key to that.
Okay. And one more time, opportunity for people to learn about orchids about the ash borer.
Yes, October 19th at 7 o'clock. Learn about orchids at the Champaign County Extension office. And don't need to register. Just come on over and learn about orchids at 7 o'clock, October 19th. And then Emerald Ash Borer Workshop on Tuesday, November 2nd from 4 to 6, the Rantoul Business Center in Rantoul. So that's for homeowners, a professional arborist, or really city officials, anybody is trying to find out more about Emerald Ash Borer.
And you don't have to register? You just show up?
You can just show up for that one as well. We will probably go ahead and do registration, later on. But yes, you can just show up.
Okay.
But check the Champaign County Extension website, and we can give you more info on that.
For anybody who's interested in gardening, you want to tune into Illinois Gardener, also on our companion TV station, WYLO-TV, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. It's a live show, and they take questions. So once a week, there's that opportunity to ask questions.
Sure.
And sometimes Sandy's on that show, and people from the university and people from different garden centers and landscaping businesses around sort of take turns. There's an ever-rotating cast of characters.
Characters, is true.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the nice thing is now you can actually go back and look at older shows, past shows.
We have them on the website.
Very cool.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Sandy Mason is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on the program once a month, always on Tuesday, and we'll see you again in November.
Sure. Holy cow. Wow.
All right.